I think the best ideas, and I've invested in, advised, and put my name on these ideas, are the ones that are the most simple.
Welcome to another exciting episode of Mind Gravity Podcast. I'm your host, Rohan Handa.
Today, we have a really special guest, Cindy Chen. Cindy is the CEO of CLC Advisors. She's an advisor and board member on startup teams, opportunity scout for strategic investment partners, a global thought leader and speaker. Her list of achievements is pretty much endless, but to name a few, she is a NASA data nod, an open data innovation program to promote data science and diversity operating within the NASA CIO office. In 2018, she was named as one of Entrepreneur Magazine's 50 most daring entrepreneurs. Along with SpaceX, Tesla's Elon Musk, General Motors' Mary Barra, IBM's Ginni Rometty, Reese Witherspoon, Chance the Rapper, Chef Jordan Andreas, and Spotify's Daniel Ek. She's passionate about smart cities, social impact, public-private sector partnerships, and building great companies. She was also part of the American delegations to the Global Entrepreneurship Summit in Silicon Valley, hosted by President Obama and U.S. Vice President Joe Biden in Marrakesh. Well, if that doesn't excite you, I don't know what will. So without any further delay, let's tune in.
Welcome to the Mind Gravity Podcast, Cindy.
Thanks, Rohan. It's good to see you again.
No, good to see you as well. And thank you so much for doing this. You know, I was going through your background and we talked prior to this conversation as well. And there's so much to unpack about you, your background and the work that you're doing. I would like to like dive straight into, tell us your backstory and what has led you to do what you are doing at the current moment.
Oh, my backstory. As Simon Sinek says, the why, right? And it's also kind of a combination of stumbling into it, actually. My background, since I was a kid, I always wanted to be a pediatrician. And so I studied and did the courses for that in undergrad, decided that I didn't want to go to medical school, and then went to work in a diagnostics pharma lab. So I got to play with liquid nitrogen when I was in, you know, university, finishing my uni years. In a cryobiology lab, actually, in one of the J&J subsidiaries. So I have some pharma roots as well. And from that, I decided that it was too isolating to be in a lab. And you would have to wait quite a number of decades until fast forward now where the action is happening in the labs, right? And I pivoted over to management consulting, worked for two of the biggest firms in the world, and from that decided to move to Silicon Valley in the Bay Area and start to, you know, think about working for a startup. And I'm telling you, it's timing is so important, and the timing was the absolute worst timing. So this is not my first crisis. So that evolution led to being there and kind of stumbling around in the Bay Area, but I made a lot of great connections there. And then when I finally moved back to the East Coast where my family was, when my daughter was being born, about to be born, I wanted to come back here, and I had to think about what was it that I wanted to do next. So this whole existential reinvention, renaissance, if you want to call it, kind of is not new to me either. So in that regard, and especially when you become a parent as well, it changes, as many folks are discovering now at home, it changes who and who you are and how you think. And I decided at the time, and it was the second crisis, when right before the structured products and the mortgage crises in Wall Street happened, I decided to start a business to look for or an advisory firm to think about alternative assets and alternative asset classes. And it was during the rise of social impact bonds. And so I was thinking about social impact more than 10 years ago, it's 2020 now. And 2008 was the time. And I was working on a task force at the time with the CEO and the CFO of Lincoln Center, and philanthropy was at the roots, and thinking about how do you preserve and save institutional organizations, and thinking about how that affects cities, et cetera. And it kind of led to circling back to just a whole bunch of opportunities, right? And tech, science, NASA, it's a really long story. I'm not in my 20s, so it can't be concise and short. It's called, you know, age gives you experience. So let's just put it that way, and time, right? So yeah.
It definitely seems like you have been through the ups and downs, not just of the valley, but of the economic upturns and downturns, or what you call the crest and the valleys of it all. How does this current pandemic that we are in feels different? Or at this point, you're like, I've been through all of this.
I think from all of these, all the ones that have occurred, this one is the most interesting. There's no words to describe it because it's affecting the entire world simultaneously, right? The beginnings may have started in Asia and kind of, you know, risen up, but it really has, that's what a global pandemic is. It's everybody's going through this crisis together, and the varying levels of suffering and the varying levels of disruption as well. I can't think of any pretty words to put it in language, but that's all occurring at this time for everybody simultaneously. And what's unique about this one in particular than the other ones is there's never been a time where human is at the core. We are spending our resources, we are spending our intellects, our intelligence collectively around the world at the same time in order to save human lives. And so, and what that meaning of those human lives mean in jobs, in recreation, in how we cope, in how we consume, in how we learn, you know, it is the number one largest learning opportunity ever digitally that has occurred. You know, my daughter, kids are learning online in school. You know, there are resources that are being available for free. You have undivided attentions because everybody's at home. So this one is one of kind, let's just put it that way.
Yeah, no, I absolutely agree with that, right? But it also makes you wonder, we have all the tools, all the skills, and all the intellect power across the globe, but it takes a virus to kind of bring that all into motion to collectively work, because otherwise we're working in silos. Right? And the West has its own innovation cycle. The East does its own. This is for the first time, probably in human history, we are seeing this collective effort coming together. And I think that bridges to my next question in terms of like innovation. How do you see that changing for what it has been in the past moving forward? What are some of the things that you're excited about that will come as a result of innovation? And to put a little more context on that, a lot of time when we talk about innovation, we see it from a 20,000 feet or 30,000 feet kind of a layer, but nobody talks much about how to execute on it. What do you think would be some of the changes that this pandemic will bring about?
Well, as I've mentioned before, a lot of human-centered design and thinking, right? It's really at the forefront now. You know, healthcare, we're going to see a lot of innovations in healthcare. We're going to see a lot of innovations in consumer product goods and how we use them, right, at home, and how much we obtain, right? Because we're looking at supply chain distribution shortages. So if I were a packaging engineer, or if I were somebody in product development, I would be sketching out some ideas right now on what does that look like? And I'm sure, you know, the CPG companies are doing that. It's affecting, we've already seen China in fintech go into pay cash-free, you know, payment systems and payment processes where it's frictionless. And you're going to see that here in the Western world now. And, you know, countries like the United States, and especially some of the countries in Europe, like Germany, which is so cash-dependent in how they operate and live, you're going to see that changing massively and accelerating. Also biotech as well, right? Our health developments and whatnot. And manufacturing is going through a huge rebirth right now in, you know, turning around their traditional operations and making automotive parts, for one example, and making PPE equipment, right? And masks and stuff like that. So those are some of the key areas and growth areas. I'm not the only person that's saying that. There's been a lot of analysts and a lot of banking CEOs and whatnot who are agreeing at this time. You'll see those innovations. As far as the startups, I mean, you see the digital online learning group is massively scaled. Zoom that we're on right now itself is moving. I'm actually talking to a very good friend of mine who's a CEO, and we've come up with we've resurrected one idea about in-home care, yeah. Right? And for the silver economy, but it actually now in this kind of framework applies to everybody because it's not just senior citizens going home. So we had been working on that idea since 2016 and we shelved it. Now we're thinking about bringing it back, and also, an idea as well of how to think about how we're absorbing digital information and content as well. And, you know, I'm lucky because he was the former head of product over at Amazon's Recognition and Computer Vision. So I've got the right person to help me with this and we're going to do it together. And, you know, we just had a nice conversation yesterday. So these kind of ideas are, it's a ripe time to start thinking if you can, right, to start thinking differently. Yeah.
No, I think that's absolutely right. There's so much to unpack. There's not one single industry that's not being impacted by what's going on. I was recently hearing about some of the unicorns in the valley, whether it be Airbnb. They were able to secure the $2 billion loan, but they still had to, you know, furlough a lot of their employees. So did Uber and some of the other companies, and there's a hiring freeze. So yeah, I think this is a critical time where new innovation and new ideas will start coming to life, new business models come to life. And you know, I have to say, given the breadth of exposure and experience you have within the technology, I don't think a lot of our listeners know that you were the one of the 50 most daring entrepreneurs that was listed by the Entrepreneur magazine back in 2018. You have officially, trademarked, if I will, hashtag the Dream Chaser. Tell us a bit more. What's the story behind that?
So Dream Chaser, it was NASA, actually. I'm also a NASA data nut. And so the data nuts, I know you're going to ask about that. So I would say 2011, I think it was, I was invited to go. It's a great story, and I would love to talk to you about it over a drink sometime. But I was invited by NASA to go to Edwards Air Force Base in the Mojave Desert in California, and it was during the transition of the close of the 35-year space shuttle program. And I was on the runway when the shuttle landed, off the side of the runway, actually, in the tumbleweeds, when the shuttle landed on board a 747. But that was like the most mind-blowing experience ever. And when it took off and did the flyby over California. Yeah. And so, you know, at the time it was going through a transition period for me. My father had been sick. He had cancer at the time and he's recovered now, but he had been sick. And so at that time I was thinking about, you know, what is that life that I want to, what life I want to live? I know a lot of people right now are really going through that because they are losing loved ones or they are not, living their lives what was normal. Now they have to adapt. And it's a really hard time period for people, right? And so I went through that then, and I wanted to think about what it was. And it was really just, you know, having a thought and putting it out there. And then, you know, another thing with the Dream Chaser that I said, well, I'm a boomerang catcher. It's like a boomerang.
That's right. Yes.
Throw it out there. And you see some of them come back really fast, and some of them come back, take years to come back. Right. And so in that regard, I thought, oh, my God, I never expected that I would be here hanging out with NASA scientists, learning how to do a sim and flying an F-18A, you know, jet. And
a dream in itself.
And it's dream. I mean, all these wonderful, amazing things that you never expect. Right. If you just open your mind and lead with the heart in that respect. And so that's what Dream Chaser is that I don't think beyond impossible anymore, right? I know I just think, you know, it is possible. It may or may not happen, but it is possible, right? So, and that's what changed the mind frame, and that's what changed the mindset and, you know, the thinking on that.
But, you know, it's fascinating. We see, we've already learned through like the kind of your backstory and the different cycles you've been through. What's been your influence, or who has been your influence along this journey?
Oh, there's been so many. I think you know, recently a friend who's pretty well known in the speaking circuit, he's a professor in a couple of universities in Kellogg and over at Northwestern as well. He had did that Facebook challenge on what's your favorite books, right? And I was like, ah, oh, man. And I was I'm almost finished with that. I have one more day left. And thinking like, what shaped you, right? And what were influences? And a lot, you know, one of note is just reading a lot of the books during these times, you know, like anything from Elizabeth Gilbert during her transition period in her life. And she's continuing actually to service that by engaging with her, you know, network and her followers, et cetera, to Lao Tzu principles, right, on meditation and sitting still. Thich Nhat Hanh, you know, I've read and have looked at his life and a little bit and understanding, like, how can you sit still, right? Yoga has been a really good teacher, especially during these really rough times. And then, you know, last night I participated in a call with somebody from MIT, which was an MIT-led call, and they were talking about religion and philosophy, right? So there's just, for me, and I have a stack of books that I always, you know, are reading. And for me, it's really, this is a time of, there's that wonderful video called The Great Realization from, you know, that Tom Foolery, I think, is the one. I'll give him a plug there because it was such a beautiful video. Did you see it?
I have, yes.
Yeah, the bedtime story. It's not just a great realization. It's also the great learning period, right. And it could be a renaissance. And so these influences are, yes, there are individuals, you know, like Oprah Winfrey is amazing as a female person of color, you know, leader, giver, all these other things. But there's also writings from, you know, way back then, and even in music itself, right? So, you know, it's a long story short, TLDR, right? Is that these experiences are led based on things that you did in your childhood, and right. You brought them all along. And at some point in time, they kind of get to a period where it all entangles in itself, and you're forced to process it, right? And you're forced to make decisions and choose. And so that's what it is.
Yeah, no, I think that's absolutely right. Because I sometimes wonder, like, humans, we have kind of, you know, maneuvered through the depths of every vertical, whether it be biology or space or computer science, but it comes down to the interconnectivity between all these areas. That's where the interdisciplinary studies is what comes known as, where we'll find newer depths. And I think that's kind of relates to what you're saying, is like, how do you blend it all together? And which is fascinating, because you worked with NASA at their NASA Datanaut program. Tell us a bit more about what that is and how it's trying to bring about some of those innovation techniques to life.
I'm so excited you asked, because I scoop on that too. So the NASA Datanauts was an open data, or is an open data innovation program. It's had stemmed out of the CIO's office in 2016. And because of the International Space Apps challenge, actually. And they noticed that 85% of the participants that were participating in space apps were men. And so they wanted to open it up to more diversity and more women involved. So it started as a women in data science program that transitions into more diversity right now. It's pretty gender diverse. You know, it's moving from one end of the spectrum and backing into it. And now it's focused on, you know, some of the earth science initiatives. And what's really amazing, and the scoop is that SpaceX announced with NASA, the European Space Agency, and JAXA, the Japanese Space Agency, they're doing an International Space Apps Challenge this month. Okay. Applications will open next week on May 12th. And they're opening up all the data sets, open data sets that you can use from the European Space Agency, Japan Space Agency, as well as NASA for COVID-19.
Oh, wow.
So these are massive big data sets that are going to be open. So you can have things from, like, you know, weather movement. You can have things from, you know, carbon dioxide, how the air moves, which is really important in understanding viral transmissions, right? You know, because that's why people are wearing masks, because it spreads. So they're looking for solutions. The categories will be announced, if there are categories, but it is going to open literally on, I think the 12th is Tuesday, right? To everyone around the world. It is the largest hackathon on the planet. And the regular space apps challenge is October 2nd to 4th. And so this year they're doing a special COVID-19 one. And NASA Datanauts, you know, we look at and we encourage individuals and people to use the data sets. There's in NASA itself, there's over 32,000 open data sets, you know, from Hubble imagery, you know, visualizations in that way, where you can create from the data that's collected. You could take a data from a supernova, mm-hmm. right? And if you're looking and building, you know, quantum physics, sure. thing, you want to know how particles go, right? It's really amazing. And I'll be a part of that as well, and encouraging people to do that.
That is fascinating. I think opening up these data assets to find viable solutions through some of these hackathons and efforts, I think that's the next frontier, right? Yeah. As we were talking earlier about bringing together the global intellect capital together and solve problems that are more relevant, not just in the present, but this will also going to impact us in the future. We don't know how this virus kind of mutates into the future, into something more complex, how the air pollution level is going to impact people's lungs, and will be impacted much more than countries where there's not much pollution. So I definitely think that's a great effort. And anyone who's listening to this should apply. And if for more questions, they can probably reach out to Cindy Chen.
Yeah, they can reach out to me, or they can reach out if they can Google International Space Apps Challenge. They'll find all the information there, or it's on NASA.gov and one of NASA's website. I really should have the URL.
I put it in my notes when I upload this. But touching back on to something that you brought up around the diversity within the Datanaut group, right? So that seems to be a change that is being gradually being brought into every industry, where you know, the diversity and equality, whether it be from the gender perspective or from the race perspective, is at the forefront to make sure the environment that people work are in as inclusive and as diverse as possible, not just because it brings in new ideas, but also provides opportunities for people to kind of come to the front of which were otherwise just hidden in the background. How do you see that changing with your experiences, you know, in your current endeavors or at NASA? Like, how do you tackle those problems? Because it's not as straightforward as a problem to solve, right? How do you make sure that you have the inclusion and diversity that's actually impactful to the society?
There's a couple of different ways to answer this question. I think it's a three-dimensional answer, right? Number one is it starts at the top. The leadership has to make a mandate that it's being intentionally inclusive, right? If that's not being driven at the top, you're not going to see change a lot. And one of the examples of late is seeing the largest asset management firms on Wall Street, like State Street and BlackRock, saying that, you know, we need to have more female and people of color on our boards. If you don't have them, we're going to vote against your entire board, right? In annual shareholder meetings. And so you're seeing that. You're seeing people like Warren Buffett in his annual shareholder meeting that occurred last Saturday, saying that there are opportunities for women to be more involved. And then he also spoke about the people who are underserved and suffering. There are opportunities there that we need to be responsible for, particularly in this pandemic. And the pandemic itself will only magnify that. On a you know, more economic level, you're seeing supply chains being disrupted everywhere, right? our food supply chain is going to be disruptive. We're relying a lot on the Southern Hemisphere for some of the goods that we eat, from avocados to fruit to, you know, even some vegetables. So these are people that are typically not considered in technology, right? Because they're in Latin America or Central America, they're in South America and or you know, in Africa region. So these are massive data sets that have not been included, right, in some of the building of companies. And this is kind of the race right now for companies like Facebook, you know, to get to the areas that are not, that don't have necessarily have the best connectivity, right? So you see that already, that kind of was already moving in that direction, but now you're going to see that accelerated. Then you also see it in consumer spending of goods, right? So on an economic level, you're seeing less spending or more spending in certain things, particularly when people are unemployed and they're not, they don't have the discretionary income anymore, any income, in order to buy food. So these problems itself in a what we call normal, right, quote unquote normal society, aren't necessarily as magnified, but we've got scale now to a point where everybody around the planet is having an issue. We haven't seen the effects of the Southern Hemisphere yet going through the pandemic. That's starting now. So when that's occurring, you're going to see these massive changes. And I think, you know, the data itself for companies and CEOs are looking at that. And you're not going to be able to forgive me for being blunt, you're not going to be able to do that if you're an Ivy League graduate who may have grown up in the Midwest, you know, is Caucasian and whatnot. You're not going to be able to understand what these issues are at scale, right? So,
yeah, I think that kind of limits the view of the world when you are thinking from a certain lens and surrounding yourself with certain network of people who can only provide you so much more input in problems that are more global, not just local.
Right. And then that's not including politics, right?
That's not including politics.
Yeah. I can talk about politics too, but in the context of NASA, you know, they're solving some of the worst, hardest challenges that are impossible, you know, for human space exploration, right? And they need everybody on board. They've sent a 70-year-old former senator to space in order to study how the effects of space impacts the senior citizens, you know, biology in their body. So, and they even include children, right? So they need all, you know, their mission mandate is promoting science and preservation of humanity, right? So it is that kind of at that level. There's no wrong answer. And what I always tell everybody is when I introduce myself, I always say, I love environments where the questions are more important than the answers, right? So you're asking a lot of questions and I guarantee you not one person in the room is going to know all the answers to them. So you need a really big, big pool or a selective amount of individuals in order to broaden that, right? And so, you know, some of that, one of your questions you asked about, what is the influences? I'm looking, you know, for writings and people's who've published who are from people of color. I'm looking for more female writers. I'm looking for, you know, people of different religions, you know, and some of that, because that helps me understand in a bigger picture where things are going to move.
Yep. No, and I think we see that on a larger big tech scenarios as well, right? When Uber was trying to expand into Asia, they literally fell on their face because they didn't understand the local problems, people, what specific issues of that region was. Similarly, these partnerships, having the right mindset that they're going into certain areas or expanding into certain areas with a partnership mindset, not just acquisition mindset, is what kind of brings about the difference. And I think you touched on some really good points and why it really matters to have people from variety of background, diversified background, to be on the table to be able to make those decisions for the help executives make certain difficult decisions, which otherwise would be very singular in nature, right? Mm-hmm. Switching gears a little bit, right? So what is CLC Advisors? What are you doing with them?
Okay, so we are an advisory firm. We have three different, I guess, three different silos in what we do. First of all, we obviously do give advice to our pool of network of investors, as well as leadership and executive teams. We help, you know, accelerators and startups, entrepreneurs scale, or ones that have already been funded, right? Scale their businesses and bring along a network. We also do some investments as well through joint venture partnerships. And lastly, we work with organizations and think tanks in order to help with some of the thinking and drive, you know, directional strategic goals in that way. Three key areas that I had already decided to do for the new decade for 2020 were, one, AI and machine learning. We are looking at companies like that. The second is geospatial technologies, right? So GPS, healthcare also kind of is involved in that, because you're now talking in a COVID era, you're talking about contact tracing and stuff like that, right? Cybersecurity. So they all follow on data, right? Anything data, right? All of them are data driven. And then third is energy, right? So we've already made the direction in switching and putting the focus areas, and have been working on that for over a year now. And now we're just in the ESG areas, or ESG, I guess we've always been since it was conceived. Now it's just accelerated. It makes you kind of like hustle a little bit more and scramble a little bit more, you know, and be like, okay, let's how do we move this, and can we move this? And during this time, I've kind of found that the answer is both yes and no. I think the yes is that yes, the direction is directionally correct, right? We will have a lot of opportunities and opportunities for wealth creation in that way, right? But the answer is also no, because there's an aspect of timing, right? And in terms of what motivates me, it's always been a trifecta in decisions. It's whether or not you're prepared and the opportunity arises itself, and the timing, right? So that the three coming together is always something that I look for, right, in patterns or whatnot. And like I said, working on certain ideas that was a little too early in 2016, but at the same time, I wish it was already built, because we'd be doing it well, right? Right?
Yeah.
So yeah. So, you know, and the key element behind any of this, and I talk about this a lot during my speeches, the key element is human capital, right? It's just human capital in general. It's the right teams and the right people.
No, absolutely. I think without having the right team, you're not going to be able to hit those milestones or KPIs that you have set for yourself.
Exactly.
You know, one question that comes up, since you have that exposure to these think tanks, accelerators, as a sounding board, as an advisor to a lot of these startups and entrepreneurs, what are some of the themes or things that come up often? And what is something that you wish people asked more?
Okay. I think as far what comes up often is the conversation of capital and resources, right? Between January and February, I had conversations with six different CEOs who wanted me to come on board with their companies, all in variety of stages, you know, things as complex as recycling aluminum in space to, you know, creating robotics here that help with in-home care, right? And so, one in healthcare and gene sequencing. And so these kind of opportunities, you look at every one of them, their decision, their catalyst in their decision is whether or not they have enough capital, right? Right? And so, and all of them were male CEOs. Actually, one was female, okay. Right? I forget. She was female, and it was a fintech thing. The number one key driver is capital and resources. And that is, in this time, being magnified as well, because there's a huge disproportion in income inequality right now. And it's a very political circumstance. It's a political situation, right? And that is bigger than me. I don't know the answers. I don't know what's going to happen tomorrow. But that is a big problem right now. And I think even in venture capital, and in Silicon Valley, that has been a problem as well, right? Of where the proportion of where funding is going. Now, if you want to grow and you want to innovate and you want to build something for a future, it's not the future, a future, then you need to start thinking about how that capital is being deployed, right? And where that needs to be spent. So every one of those conversations, capital and resources, even for men, right? And a few of them are men of color, right? It's hard, right? And for women, it's doubled, triple time. However, this time period, and I kind of have, you know, is also a very, I think it'll be a very, we'll be moving towards times where there's going to be more opportunities for women, just because they're real, people are realizing being at home, how difficult it is, right? And you're realizing what those challenges are, especially if you have children, right? And how to conduct those meetings and make those decisions, just even getting the food itself, right? In a pandemic where you could catch a virus, right? Being out and about. So these kind of issues bring to light different thinking, right? And operating. Now, your second part of the question, I wished even just 4 months ago, I wish people were more focused on humans, right? I was just like, I had wished at the time that they were more focused on humans and what those situations are that are struggles. And be careful what you wish for. I did not wish for a pandemic. This is not my fault, right? But I think, again, this is the first time in all the years that I've seen, that I've been with tech, and seeing tech being developed, you know, I saw some of the first URLs and whatnot. It's the first time that people are at the very core in driving software technologies, right? And not just for the sake of disruption. People actually really care that their friend caught a virus, or their grandmother or their father, you know, is being affected. So that gives me some hope.
I think that's right. You know, the easy access to capital has kind of diluted the way we think about humans as a resource. It's more of a commodity at this point. Yep, okay, if this doesn't work, the next one would, you know. Yeah. So how do we bring that human-centered, not just the design aspect, but also creating teams that are more human-centered? They're not just replaceable commodities that if once the job is done, we can move on.
Well, I think, you know, again, we operate in different worlds. So in a more corporate environment, they're really understanding working from home and how effective it's been, right? Some people have said they've been more, just as productive or even more, because you're cutting down on commute times and whatnot. That itself will change the commercial real estate industry, right? You're seeing restaurants that had been open for decades or have those rents all of a sudden being shut. Yeah. So you have landlords, right, who may not get their income or their investment back, right, to pay those mortgages or whatever the debts are on that. You have startups that, you know, they operate, you know, in those environments, and a lot of people have worked from home, or they have staggered workforces and different times when people work. So you're going to see that continuing, right? And you're going to see much more attention and spotlight on what's right and what's wrong when it comes to a person. And we're seeing that happen in social impact areas, right? In societal norms, et cetera. Like what happened to the young gentleman in Florida, right? In Georgia.
Yeah,
in Georgia. And you're seeing the attention and that's kind of spotlight. And that itself is, you know, a good thing and a bad thing too, right? It's like people have written TV series about, you know, streaming series about these kind of situations on how tech brains and put it out there. So that in itself, you're going to see.
Right. No, I agree. And I think, and you have so many freedoms to be offered, there's still human cost of doing all of that. And it's starting to come to life. And it's been a recurrent theme. And unfortunately, not much is being done about it. And I think we can have a completely different episode that kind of touches on all those areas. But one thing I really like when you were talking about the things that are that needs to change is around, you know, even in the Silicon Valley, you have venture capitalists and the capital and resource access for women, right? From what I could see and tell, you'd be an exception, not a norm in the Valley or in the industry in general, you know, with your achievements, the things that you have done, being able to achieve, whether it be with CLC or being, you know, nominated for the 50 Boldest Entrepreneurs. And I've had friends who are struggling to get their business off the ground, and they seem to have the similar challenges where, you know, in a male-dominant environment, they struggle to get their footing, whether it be from capital reasons or for a variety of other social norms that have been set up. What advice would you have for women who are starting their business, things that should keep in mind and the thing that should just continue, you know, bulldoze on no matter what people say?
I think getting, again, having the right support network, right? You're going to go through a period, and this happens with everybody. It's not just women. You're going to have a period where you're going to find out who your friends are, you know, and it's very clear now. I think the dust has come out when people are in a pandemic. You know who your real friends are and who's calling you and who's reaching out and who's being silent, right? And at that point, you know, do you reach out to them, et cetera? You're going to start small and ask your inner circle first of, you know, for capital, because I think one of the biggest issues is capital. Another is having an understanding of whether or not it's actually a viable product fit in what a market is. I've seen, you know, I've sat through and judged accelerator competitions and sat through investor, you know, speed dating things in Spain and Germany and Austria as well, the US. And I've seen many of them, but a lot of it is not a market fit, right? So in one area versus another. So is it really that scalable? Is your solution, it's not going to be a unicorn at that point, right? It's going to be a viable solution locally. And so you have to look at it from a realistic perspective. And another issue with that as well is the market doesn't exist yet, right? So if you don't have an existing market, you're going to see a huge amount of user adoption issues. And I'll say cryptocurrencies is one of them, right? We know the mass adoption has not occurred on them, and it may not occur. And so, you know, the use of that is really telltale telling. And didn't start with crypto. It started with tech itself, right? And so the buy-in on that, I think the best ideas, and I've invested and advised and put my name on these ideas, are the ones that are the most simple. Mm-hmm. The problems, you know, that happens, it doesn't matter what, you know, whether you're green, orange, tall, short, whatever, you know, child or you know, senior, in things like, we all use soap. It's as simple as soap. Right. And it's right under your nose. Right. And so, you know, those are one of the examples. So if your solution is, I want to start another social media, you know, platform, good luck out there. Right.
Yeah.
Again, my areas are data, right? AI, machine learning, geospatial, and energy. There's a reason for that, right? They affect everybody. And so think about that from that perspective. That's more of an investor lens. But if it is something that you're really passionate about and you're just so committed because you want to learn this and you don't care whether or not you succeed or fail, but it really is your lab and your learning experience, by all means, do that. I failed so many times and advised so many startup entrepreneurs that never went anywhere, but all of those lessons that have combined were very helpful in bringing me to where I am now. So from that perspective, I would never turn, you know, say to somebody, don't do it, right? But I will give you, you know, my opinion, which is only one opinion out of thousands out there, right? And millions out there. And I think it's really choosing and deciding which is the right one for what you're trying to do. right? And to know that an opinion of that is of negative impact is the answer may not necessarily be no, but it's not right now.
Right.
And it's not personal.
Right.
In that regard, it's based on what areas that I know, the areas that I, you know, live in, the areas that I operate or my network operates and stuff like that. So you have to be, what is the word that you have to have stamina,
right? Persevere through it all.
Perseverance, stamina, continue to keep going, especially if you believe in the idea. And if the idea is too sick, you just don't know. And you have to start. You just have to start. And that's the only way that you're going to know. But do take in mind and get the right people on board and whatnot.
So I think that's a good point, right? Having the right community support or the network, it's kind of like a mesh, your safety net, where you know there's someone to fall on, whether it be your team or whether it be your mentors. Who have been your mentors through your journey? I'm sure, as you mentioned, that you know failure is a byproduct of doing anything that's no one has done before. So who have been your mentors along the way that kind of you know shaped your career?
Oh, I have positive and negative stories too. I think one is a double-edged sword is my mother. You know, she's fearless and she's delivering me goods, you know, and I'm like, Costco, and thank you, Mom, for the toilet paper. She's very resourceful and she's also very tough. She was very, expected a lot out of us, but she also was, she doesn't want to see us go hungry. So she's a feeder. So she's nurturing in that way. So she's my first. My dad is a physicist and he was a semiconductor guy. And so through him, I learned a lot about science and space and physics, right? And so, you know, my parents themselves, I've read and been inspired a lot by Oprah Winfrey. I don't know her, but I read her stuff and whatnot. I would say, in its way, the New York Public Library and any public library that I've touched upon have been great mentors because they have, you know, libraries and libraries of people's experiences and their advice, right? As far as living individuals, there are certainly quite a number of them. This is a good story for one, and I'll briefly tell it. I was invited to visit the Large Hadron Collider in CERN.
Okay.
Literally a year and 1 week after that NASA space shuttle experience in Edwards Air Force Base, right? And I, at the time on the runway, this is what I talked about, boomerang and dream chasing, right?
Right.
I said, why don't we do some collaboration with CERN? Because, you know, NASA, we look at the universe and stuff. CERN, they're trying to figure out the origins of the universe. Wouldn't there be a combined thing? And literally a year and 1 week later, I was in Switzerland going to, you know, 1,000 meters underground. But I'll tell you, the two places that I've been the most understood of what I wanted to do was on that runway, at CERN. And so one of my mentors at CERN, I met a gentleman, Ben. Ben was the pioneer for network infrastructures, right?
Okay.
And so he was the pioneer of that. And Tim Berners-Lee cites him as one of his mentors. And I was fortunate to meet Ben when I was there. And I actually gave him a copy of the magazine too, of the Entrepreneur magazine, when I saw him last. And when I met him, he was, you know, telling us stories about when Tim was creating the web at CERN. And he was telling us, and he's like, he was introduced as one of the mentors. And at the end of the conversation, I asked him, I was like, can you be my mentor? And he's like, sure. What do you want to do? What do you want to build? You know, I gave him some ideas, and next thing I know, the idea that I'd been thinking about, all of a sudden Elon Musk is building something, right? And I was like, oh man, I missed that boat. And I have proof because I've sent him an email, right? And so, so I've been very fortunate to meet someone like him, another friend of mine. I don't want to publicly say this because I don't think you want to, but he did a lot of M&A, and he's a big known, well-known M&A guy in the tech industry, and now he's in private equity, and he's been very kind and really generous and sharing and listening and sharing, you know, viewpoints and whatnot. And I think why, you know, And I've mentored a lot of women, like a lot of people as well. And what it is really not just the act of asking somebody, right? But really, it's like during this pandemic, I have a post-it note of a list of people that I want to contact on a weekly basis and make sure they're okay, right? Some of them live alone. Some of them are older, obviously my family, right. You know, loved ones. And it's that, it's like mentors are like that. They want to hear from you. They don't want to be asked all the time for stuff.
Right.
They want to, you know, be updated from you. And if you drop the ball or you're constantly asking, it's a very one-sided relationship. And it shouldn't be that way because these are highly successful or highly intelligent. You wanted to ask them to be your mentor for a reason, right? So make sure that you cultivate that relationship. Check in, you know, tell them what's going on, ask them how they're doing, is there anything that they need? It's all about relationships.
Right? Yeah, no, I think that is absolutely right. And I was going to ask you the same question, like, and, you know, we are such a tech savvy generation. We forget to make the list and forget to make, you know, contact people who can or have had like influence in our life, whether it be our parents or otherwise. I think, getting mentored from the right person can have like a very meaningful impact, not just on at a career level, but also or professional level, but also at personal level. So I think you've touched like really amazing points around that. And I think a lot of our listeners would love to, you know, follow that advice as well. Mm-hmm. And I know we are a little crunch on time. One last question before I let you go, or actually two questions. You know, so what is one other startup that you see out there that you think is doing really inspiring work or something that we should keep an eye out on?
Well, whether it's inspiring or not, it's, you know, right now Zoom is a leader, right? We're using the platform. It's keeping me connected with people on a daily basis. I have daily conversations. I'm using it as a learning tool as well because you have calls on them when the other people are talking, you're listening. I mean, I was on a call with Mark Cuban last week. You know, I was on a call with Brené Brown. It's like these people I would never, ever, ever, ever have had access to,
right?
Right? And it's not because of the Zoom. Zoom is just a tool, right? It's because of other people's networks, right? And what they wanted to bring to the table and capture your attention. So, you know, and yeah, Mark Cuban and Brené Brown and Oprah, if you want a mentee, definitely. But I think Zoom is one. I think that, you know, I certainly have my own portfolio of investments as well. I will say, and I'm biased because I'm on their board and I invested in them. Company called Ava, right now out of Berlin, we built it 5 years ago to respond to public safety. You know, what you can do with the weather data, you can do with public safety data. And so the AI algorithms have been up and running. This company is affecting change. It's based in Europe right now. We've had conversations with the US. And there's been interest in China and the Middle East in it, and it's basically, you know, we're saving lives. We're trying to save lives. And we're able to add to COVID in the way because the algorithms and the infrastructure, technical infrastructure, had already been built right. 5 years ago, right? So if there's all this COVID data, we can just literally dump it into the platform, and it's amazing. It really is amazing. It's being utilized right now by globally by one of the major pharmaceutical companies right out there. So it's a really growing startup, very promising, and it's gotten a lot of eyes and attention, you know, recently. And so I'm very optimistic about it. The reason why I look this way is because I don't ever want to think about people's safety or their health being compromised, right? Remember, since I was a kid, I wanted to be a doctor. It means that I care about human lives, right? And so that in itself worries me, right? As a person, as a mom, as an executive, as a leader, all these things. And so that in itself is a blessing, and as well as a responsibility.
No, I totally agree with you on that. And I'll keep an eye out on Eva and all the wonderful stuff that comes out of it. Cindy, I had a blast talking to you. So many different areas we talked about. I wish we had more time. I will continue talking. But before I leave you, where can our listeners reach out?
Sure. I don't know if they are going to see the video or not, but I put up my information. The company is called CLC Advisors. It's on Twitter and Facebook. And our most recent things, I'm going to publish my CEO letter, will be on Medium, or our website. So clcadvisors.com, or you can find CLC Advisors on Medium. You can find me personally on Twitter at Cindy L. Chin, which is my Twitter name, handle, and Instagram as well. You're going to see all the food that I've been cooking at home. Perfect. And I do have one last thought that I wanted to share with everybody.
Oh, yes, please do.
Yeah, and I want about this whole time period. And these are important. One, germs and viruses know no borders, right? They're going to be everywhere. Two, we don't know what will happen tomorrow. Closed borders are not good for the economies. You cannot solve climate change with closed borders. Right? If you look at the East Coast, we just had a polar vortex storm last night. Right. Global trade lifts everybody out of poverty. And the disease is here to stay. You're going to have more opportunities for women and people of color coming after this pandemic, or during this. The disease is here to stay. Look after people first and care. Not just care, but really give them the care that they need, right? And the last thing, and Warren Buffett said this in his annual meeting last week, you'd never want a serious crisis to go to waste. And it was a quote from Rahm Emanuel. So don't let this one go to waste.
Yep. No, brilliant advice as again, Cindy Chin, hitting it out of the park. Thank you so much for your time.
Thank you. Good to see you.
Thank you everyone for tuning in. That was a blast. I really enjoyed my conversation with Cindy Chin, and I hope you did as well. This is the time we call it an end. So peace out, and until next week, namaste.